What was the tax collector asking for when he asked God to have mercy on him? I asked a friend of mine what he thought he was asking for. And my friend thought for a moment and then said that he connects it with the famous image of Saint Therese of Lisieux. She pictured herself as a toddler at the foot of a flight of stairs. She wanted to get upstairs where her mother was. She kept raising her leg to get onto the first step, and she couldn't reach it. She tried and tried and was getting exasperated. At one point, her mother looked down and noticed Therese's efforts. Laughingly, she came down the steps and swept her daughter up into her arms and carried her up the stairs effortlessly. The tax collector is saying in so many words, Lord, don't regard my sinful deeds and my sinful attitude. Don't measure how you relate to me, Lord, by how I have up till now related to you. Do something fresh and original with me. Make it possible for you and me to start afresh, to have a new beginning. Make me what you want me to be, someone who is in right relationship with you, my God, with my neighbors, and with myself. Have mercy on me, O God, he's saying. I have been a sinner up till now, but now I can become a new creation. If you desire to do that, God, I stand before you as pure, unalloyed need. Please give me what I most need and most want right now, your love for me, which can bring about the forgiveness of my sins and transformation of me into your child, your image and likeness. Jesus tells us that the tax collector went home justified, made just, made righteous. This is biblical language for saying that the tax collector went home in right relationship with God because God declared him in right relationship and made him to be someone in a right relationship with God. On the other hand, the Pharisee prayed with what Luke Timothy Johnson calls peripheral vision. He prayed to God with his eyes on the rest of humankind, and in particular, with his eyes on this tax collector. He began by thanking God, which is a great start, but he immediately veers off track by telling God how superior he is to other people. He isn't greedy or dishonest or adulterous like other people. He fasts and pays tithes beyond what is required. He presents all this as a list of his own achievements, done on his own by himself. He has no need of forgiveness or mercy. It sounds as though he would like God to congratulate him on his fine moral achievements. There is no sense that his moral achievements are God's gifts to him. Actually, his achievements are what Father John Hoy calls receivements, not achievements. And he has no awareness that his moral achievements are meant to bind him to his fellow human beings, not separate him from them and set him on a superior perch. The tax collector doesn't raise his eyes, he beats his breast, and he doesn't give God a list of achievements. Instead, he cries out for what he most needs from God. The prayer of this lonely man pierced the clouds and reached God's heart, as the book of Sirach expresses it this morning. These two types, for that is what they are, represent for me two examples of self-knowledge, or the lack thereof. One has zero self-knowledge. The other professes a profound self-knowledge. One tells God who he is. The other pleads with God to change who he is. One is not in need. He identifies himself as a doer and achiever. The other stands in radical need before God. He wants to be a big-time receiver of pure gift, gift that he absolutely needs and achingly wants. When I think about our country these days, I want to stand or kneel before God and ask God desperately to make us a new creation, or at least to make us more of a new creation, to make us a more civil nation, a nation of healthier political discourse, a nation of people who care more about the truth and care more about the disadvantaged, who care about healthy and just ways of relating to our neighbors beyond our borders. Many of us believe that these days we are seeing some of the worst of what we can be, and we long for a fresh start, for a new beginning. But there is no magical reset button, no magical wand that will transform everything. But there are some things we can do. First of all, and I try to get in touch with this again and again, I get discouraged. We have to keep before our eyes what God is laboring to do in and with our world. God has dedicated all God's resources to bringing about God's reign, God's kingdom, a world of truth and compassion and justice and love, a world where all God's children share in the earth's abundance and where all God's children treat the earth's abundance with the care of good stewards. I don't mean this as a kind of pious statement, but as the deepest truth of our lives. The world is God's project before it is our project. And that is the great good news. We are not being asked to carry the weight of the world on our shoulders by ourselves. We are called to do our finite part, trusting that God will make a mustard tree out of mustard seeds. Secondly, we can try to be a people who care more about the truth. To be people who care about the truth, even if the truth will somehow hurt us. To care about the truth, even if it reveals where we have failed in compassion or in the pursuit of justice. Thirdly, we can continue to do our part as collaborators with God and as people who care about the truth while not despising our neighbors, not looking down on them, not feeling superior to them. For me, the supreme example of this, it comes from our deepest narrative. Jesus, as he went through his passion, he was profoundly united with God's source of all, whom he called Abba, and was thoroughly dedicated to Abba's project in the world. But Jesus did not make anything of the fact that he was morally superior to the disciples who were deserting him and the Jewish authorities who were falsely accusing him or the Roman soldiers who were torturing him. He loved them all to the end. He loved them all to the end, while courageously refusing to conspire with the evil they were doing. This is a very narrow path to walk, to stay committed to God's project, to keep growing in truthfulness, and not to succumb to the temptation to distort the truth to get one's own way, and not to be like the Pharisee in today's parable. In today's bulletin, there is an examination of conscience about ourselves as citizens. I really recommend it to you. It invites us beyond looking at just our own personal lives to what in our hearts we cherish about our country and what in our hearts we grieve about with regard to our country now, and to very honestly bring all this to God. I stand before you having for this week really, really trying to pray and think about what do we do as believers at a time like this when the country is in such turmoil and such distress with great fears about no matter who's elected, what things will be like after the election for our country. But one thing we can do, and the resource we do have, is to ask God to show us how we can better collaborate with what God's trying to bring about right now. Maybe we have to unravel to some degree as a country in order to come to a deeper place. and a newer future. Maybe there's something aborning in us that's a bloody birthing process for a healthier country, a more truthful country, a more compassionate country that involves us having to go through this dark time. I don't know. That's my most hopeful reading of all of this. Maybe that's what God's up to. We have to really taste some of these depths in order to become more available to God, what God's doing for us. I hope that's the case. I desperately hope that's the case. But let's learn from this simple story of the tax collector and the Pharisee how to align ourselves more and more with the God who labors to bring all things into right relationship.